Hello, this is Chase Herbert sitting in for Valerie Silver, and this is Spotlight. Today I'm with Justin American, host of the Justin American Radio Hour, which airs every Wednesday evening at 8 right here on WWPR AM 1490. Now, Justin has written a really good book on the Founding Fathers. The book is titled Interview with the Founders. Justin, why don't you tell us how you came up with the idea for writing Interview with the Founders, and what inspired you to put the book together this way?
Well, thank you, Chase. It's glad to be here. I'm really glad to be able to talk to your audience today, our audience today, because I'm also a show host here on AM 1490. So, you know, a number of years ago, I spent 30 years in the United States military, and about the 20-year point, I'd gotten to a certain rank and a certain level, and I started to think, I took an oath one day, I made the rank of lieutenant colonel, and I raised my right hand and I said, support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I thought, What does that exactly mean, to support and defend the Constitution? Does that mean that I should go stand by it? You know, there's a copy of it, one of the original copies in the National Archives. Should I go stand by it and like hold a rifle and go, okay, I'm going to defend it? And I thought, no, that's not really it.
That's not what they meant.
How about support it? You know, should I hold it up? Like, okay, I'm going to hold it up. Man, this is really heavy. How long do I have to do this for? I was like, no, that's really not what it's about. And so I thought, well, it must be what it stands for.
Right.
And then I thought, okay, well, what does it stand for? Well, it stands for liberty, freedom, democracy. And then I thought,
and justice for all.
Justice for all. And that's kind of nebulous, too. And I was like, what does it really stand for? And I thought, well, who could I go talk to figure out what it really stands for? You know, you might as well go talk to the people who came up with the idea for the United States Constitution. And I thought, oh, man, that's too bad. They're dead.
For hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years. There's no YouTube videos. There weren't even 8-track tapes back then.
Wow.
And then I thought, well, you know, I'm kind of a history major and a philosophy major and the humanity. I was like, they wrote a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, they wrote all kinds of letters to each other and speeches to each other and farewell and all those kind of things and inaugural speeches. And I thought I could go back and read through that, the Federalist Papers, which we're going to talk about here soon. And I could, like, do an interview with them. I could ask them a question, and then I could just quote them. Like, what do you think the role of the federal government is in education in America? What do you think the role for – what about religion? What are your thoughts on that? And there's so much that they wrote that I was actually able to come up with enough material to actually write this book, Interviews with the Founders. And, you know, there's some commentary in there. So about 20% of it is commentary for me on what the Founding Fathers said about the original ideas of what it means to be just an American. So there you go. And so I finally decided I'd figure out, after all those 20 years of supporting and defending the Constitution, I figured, you know, I might eventually want to figure out exactly what it is that I'm supporting and defending.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, the format, how did you come up with the format for the book?
So I wanted to do something a little different and a little innovative, because there are lots of history books out there, and I've read them, and they're kind of dry. And if I just wrote a typical book about the Founding Fathers, you know, it'd be like another snoozer that people would put on the shelf. But, you know, I wanted to try and make it like a journalistic interview where it was as interactive as a book could be. It would be an interaction. This person would talk, and then that person would talk, and then I would ask a question as a journalist, like a moderator in an interview or a debate. And so I was able to, I was like, hey, you know, I could get these six people, Alexander Hamilton, Benjamin Franklin, James Madison, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and who's the sixth one? I can't think off the top of my head, but I could get these six guys who were kind of considered to be the main Founding Fathers, and I could just kind of have them banter back and forth with me in a dialogue format, almost like a transcript of an interview. Mm-hmm. And that would be maybe a little more interesting and a little more exciting than simply just, let's just write another history book that'll get put on the shelf somewhere and, you know, help people go to sleep at night. Mm-hmm. So that was the format.
Did you feel that one contributed more than the others?
You know, George Watt, the first three presidents, I think, made a huge contribution. Nah, it's hard to say. You know, the presidents obviously made a huge contribution, but then you've got Alexander Hamilton and James Madison, who wrote, along with John Jay, the Federalist Papers. So you're like, well, the Federalist Papers were a huge contribution. So I don't know. I mean, I suppose George Washington, if you had to look at one based on his service to the country during the Revolutionary War and then his time as the president, and the things that he was able, his leadership and what it was able to accomplish, what he was able to accomplish. I'd have to say he's the main guy, but boy, he had it's like a quarterback. You can have a really good quarterback, but if you don't have good wide receivers, if you don't have a good line, if you don't have good running backs, you're not going to win a lot of games. And, you know, these guys, George Washington was a quarterback, but he had great receivers, great running backs, Jefferson, Adams, Madison, Franklin. He just had a great team. You know, the right people in the right place at the right time.
Well, there's no doubt these were inspired men. Mm-hmm. But let me ask you, how much research did you do? And where can readers of your book find some of these documents themselves?
Yeah, so a great source that I found. So I had these books. You know, I have way too many books at my house. I think my wife would like me to get rid of a few of them. But the cool thing about that is I really never, you know, in the studies that I do, I'm getting an advanced degree in the humanities. I really never have to go to the library because I have over 1,000 books at my house.
Really?
Yeah. And so I have books like quotations of the founding fathers, you know, and you start reading through them. And one thing you have to be real careful about when you look at those kind of documents and you find these quotes online is you have to be sure that they have an original source, because there are lots of quotes out there that are attributed to famous people, certainly to the founding fathers, that have been twisted and turned, and they're not the original source. So I said, well, that was a cool quote about, you know, the size and role of federal government. And I said, well, it was in the book, and it didn't have a reference. It just said, quote, George Washington. I was like, okay. Hmm. Well, I found this website called founders.archives.gov.
Right.
And it's run by the National Archives, and they have transcribed hundreds of thousands of founding era documents, letters that Jefferson wrote to Adams, that Adams wrote to Jefferson, inaugural speeches, departure speeches, just notes from that era in government, and they're all there. And so what you can do is you can say, well, here's the quote, and you can take, like, you know, 7 words out of the quote, and you can go to that National Archive website, and then you put the quote in the search box, you put parentheses around it so you get those exact words, and then you can verify whether it was an actual quote or not. You can go to the original document that's been transcribed. You know, this quote came from a letter from George Washington to Thomas Jefferson on, you know, the 7th of February, 1789, and you're like, there it is.
So are you seeing the original document?
Well, you're not seeing, you're seeing a transcription, because, you know, they wrote in handwriting. Most of what they wrote was in handwriting.
Cursive.
Cursive. So, although, and there are a lot of documents in newspapers and stuff too, so those are sometimes hard to read, but these are exact transcriptions of what they wrote. So you can see the original document, but the transcription is what you want to read, because a lot of them are hard to decipher. They're photos of letters. Those are hard to read, but you know, someone has done a professional job of transcribing exactly what they said.
So since we've taken cursive writing out of our schools,
mm-hmm.
they can view the original document, but they, as you said, they have transcribed it so people can understand.
That's correct. So you can, decipher, you know, what's being written. Remember, you know, a lot of the letters were formed differently back then, and it's just, it can be hard to decipher 18th century writing and printing. It's much easier just to read the transcription. Yep.
Well, you know, one thing about words is that they change.
Right. That is true. That is true.
You know, so it could mean one thing, you know, back in the 1700s,
that is
and
true.
Today be used in a totally different fashion. I guess what I'm trying to get at here is, if you look at these documents mm-hmm. in the original format,
mm-hmm.
how close would you say the transcriptions are?
Well, they're exact. I mean, they didn't go back and, I mean, these are professional transcribers that have been hired by the National Archives to do this. They just wrote what they said. I mean, you can even see places they kept misspellings, for instance. They transcribed exactly what was on the letter. It's not like they said, well, this is what I think he's saying. That's
what I'm getting at right there.
They transcribed exactly what's in the letter. If they misspelled something, it's in the letter. If their grammar is horrible, it's in the letter. They just transcribed it exactly. They didn't go back and redo the letter, fix the grammar and the spelling.
In other words,
fill in the
they
blanks.
Didn't edit it.
They didn't edit it.
Okay.
They just transcribed what's right in the document. So
now, again, I'd like to remind my listeners that we are here today with Justin American. We're talking about his book, Interview with the Founders. Now, Justin, let me ask you this. If you had to put your finger on it, what would you say are the three primary things that you learned most from your research?
The three primary things that I learned from my research.
Yeah.
So that the size and role of the federal government is completely out of hand. That the idea was, even, you know, Alexander Hamilton, for instance, had an idea of a little stronger, bigger federal government than Jefferson had, but none of them had the ideas of this expansive, bureaucratic, large, you know, getting into education. You know, I can think of one quote in my book where Thomas Jefferson basically says, if anyone thinks that the education of children should be done anywhere else than with, you know, in local wards and local parents, basically, you know, the parents and the city or the county working together, it is, that idea is against all experience. And yet we have a Department of Education that meddles in local school districts and provides funds to the tune of billions of dollars a year. And guess what? With all those funds come all kinds of weird rules and regulations that
right.
the federal government has no business being in. That's just one example. HUD, Housing and Urban Development. The list just goes on and on of all the letters and all the agencies. So that's number one, is it's just, and what that requires is you have to have a whole lot more taxes, because you have to, you know, by the way, I don't want to disparage people that work in government, because, you know, if the government puts out a, decides we're going to create all these jobs, and then people go out and get hired by them, and they're just doing their job. It's like, I just got some rules to follow. This is what I do. Sometimes I make them. You know, okay, great, you're doing your job.
But I don't know about that, because, I mean, that up in Virginia, that's why Glenn Youngkin won, you know?
True. Well,
because, you know, because you know, the dude on the other side said, you know, hey, parents should have nothing to say with exactly how our, you know, how their kids are raised. They need to basically just sit there and shut up and let us decide what's best for their children.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at what you were just speaking on, you know, it's completely the opposite.
That's true. And you're right. I'm sure that there are bureaucrats that are making rules and regulations they should have no business doing, and they're meddling in people's lives. There's no doubt about that. I just wanted to make a general statement about, I don't disparage government workers. They're just
people who go to work every day.
Go work every day, hired, get a job. So, but that was number one. Like, it's just out of control big. It's out of control big at the state. It's out of control big even in the county. You know, you read the county building code, and I could give you a long story about installing an air conditioner, and some pipe was a half inch. I don't know. It was just a nightmare. Having the county come out and
give me that story. I'd like to hear that.
It's a long and painful story. The bottom line is, it was just, we could have pushed a pipe. The installer could have pushed a pipe and taken a picture of it and moved it from a half inch to an inch, but that wasn't good enough because the county guy had to come back out and inspect it again, and it was just a nightmare. That's just an example of that. So that was number one thing. The number two, you asked me what the three things are. The number two thing would be, I think that the role of religion, and let's get this straight, it's not that anybody has to believe in a certain religion or practice it, but the role of religious values, and again, a quote from Washington comes to mind, and I'm paraphrasing it, but he said, anybody who believes that good morality in a society can be maintained without religion is not thinking correctly, and experience would not show that. He said, whatever we can contribute to refined minds. What he meant was, you know, you can get very well educated and read all the ethics of Aristotle and Plato and other ethics. You could read Confucius, and he goes, okay, maybe, you know, people that have PhDs in philosophy could figure a lot of this morality stuff out on their own and reason through their own brains about how to act. But it's for 95% of the people out there, you just follow the Ten Commandments, you know, and you read the Sermon on the Mount, chapters 5 to 7 of the New Testament. Those are the Judeo-Christian values that we have, and you just follow those and you just live by them. And you know, plumbers don't have time. They're like, I want a good plumber to come to my house. I, you know, when he's driving between jobs, maybe he can listen to some philosophy on YouTube or something, but he doesn't have time to become an expert on Confucian, Aristotelian philosophy and then compare the two and figure out what his ethical moral system is going to be. You know, it's like just follow the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount and live by those, teach your kids those, and society's going to run pretty well.
Well, that's the key there, teach your kids, because a lot of this is supposed to be done in the home, is it not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, it's a partnership, obviously, between schools and families, but, yeah, the values definitely need to start at home and be taught at home. And, again, even if, you know, people are not practicers of Judeo-Christian religions, those values are the foundation of the economic, moral, social, and political systems of America. And if we don't live, for instance, I mean, how can you have a capitalist free market system where people make contracts and conduct commerce like that if you're lying, cheating, and stealing? It just doesn't work, right? It just falls apart. Or, you know, this whole voter election integrity thing. I mean, if we generally were truthful and honest people, whatever side you are on in that debate, we wouldn't have to worry about it so much because, like, well, and we kind of generally know that we don't lie, steal, and cheat in the United States of America. It's just part of who we are. That debate, hopefully, we wouldn't even have to have.
Well, so. I remember when good old Bart would just mosey up to the table and make his mark. and they would count them, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
One man, one vote, one woman,
that's
one
right.
vote, you
yeah.
know. But now it seems with the advent of technology, it's very difficult. I find it, my personal opinion, if I may state it, is just that it's hard to maintain what the true count is.
Yeah.
And as long as there's that element of doubt, there is always going to be a cloud over future elections. Yeah, and as long as there are the machines.
Yeah. You know, I think in Afghanistan, for some of their elections, they're actually doing fingerprint identification. Like, but why is that a bad idea if they can do it in Afghanistan?
Well, you remember when Jimmy Carter used to go overseas and they would make them mark their finger in ink to prove that they had voted and cast their one vote for one count?
Yeah. And, you know, one more thing on that religion thing, too, I want to recognize is even some people have heard of the Thomas Jefferson thing with separation of church and state. And you go back and read what he said and what he wrote and some of the laws that he'd signed. There was no idea in his brain that he wanted a wall of separation between church and state. That was in a letter that he wrote to the Danbury Baptist. Long story, but even he, who was not typically what we would call an evangelical Christian, Jesus Christ my Savior, he actually made the statement that the moral system as Jesus Christ, after he studied, he was the kind of guy that went out and studied Confucius and Aristotle and all these other world ethical systems, and he said it's the best and most beautiful moral system that has been left to man and never will be left to man. It's just what it is. They all believed in it, whether or not they believed in the theology of Christianity and to what extent they did, some didn't, but they all believed in that Judeo-Christian moral value system based on the Bible, so both the Old and New Testament.
When you said that, you know, he didn't go abroad, you know, and, you know, basically go hang out with Buddha, you know, what have you. You know, I was just recently watching a thing on the Beatles, and they were showing when they went out and hung out with the Maharishi Raha. So just kind of popped into my head there, but I get your drift. Yeah. In other words, you know, Jefferson's not basically saying that they need to be separated. I think because if you look at the courthouses and, you know, and everything that there is in government, you know, basically, you know, the Ten Commandments would be outside years past, and in God we trust, you know. So, you know, they certainly gave all providence to God.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And then the third thing that I probably, you know, learned from my research is that we don't know this stuff well enough. Even just the plumber who gets up and goes to work every day and supports his family, there should be a certain modicum of knowledge about the fundamental principles, constitutional principles, civic principles of the United States of America. We don't know them well enough. And the reason I say that is because too many people are easily swayed by nice sounding ideas like the rich should pay their fair share of the taxes. Well, where's that in the Constitution? You know, what's the fair share? Who's going to decide that? You know, those kind of nice sounding. We should take care of the poor and the tired of the hungry. Well, I can show you a quote where Madison said that charity, the federal government at least, has no role for charity, period. Like, there's no role for charity in the federal government. As a matter of fact, that comes from the story behind that when he made that statement in the Congressional Record is there was an uprising in what is now the country of Haiti, and some French refugees who were slaveholders at the time ended up coming to South Carolina in 1793, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And so there was a proposition put forward in Congress that Congress should authorize some money, taxpayers' money, to provide a refugee relief for these French refugees that were coming. And Madison was like, good idea, but there's no constitutional authority to do that. I mean, if I want to give some of my money, or the people in Charleston, I think that's where they landed, want to get together and do that, even the state. You know, that this, he was talking about the federal government. I guess if the state government wanted to allocate them some money, fine. But there's no role for charity in the federal government. And yet you look at what percentage of the federal government today is involved in charitable endeavors, you know, food stamps, housing, whatever, you know, welfare programs there are. It's around 50% of the federal budget is for those programs. And, yeah, so there you go.
Well, we owe all of that to LBJ.
That and FDR too,
right?
Unfortunately, but anyway. All right, yep. So those are the three things about my book.
Well, tell me this.
Okay.
How do you see the Founding Fathers' ideas of what America should be back then versus what America has become today?
Yeah. Always good to use the brain before you use your mouth. It's contained in the preamble to the Declaration, right? You know, the preamble to the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights among men, governments are instituted. It's become about things other than securing rights. By the way, men back then meant mankind. You might, well, what about slaves? What about women didn't have the right to vote? Look, we fixed all that along the way because of what that says. What that said, what I just read or kind of pulled out of my memory was like, look, yeah, everybody has these rights. And right at that moment in time, they didn't have them because that's the way society had been for thousands of years. But we, over the next 200 years, fixed that, you know, and it's become... It's become more about, well, what can, I tell this to politicians all the time. I say, look, your job is not, what kind of good things can you do for people? Your job is to secure their rights. So COVID was a great example. So, well, there's a virus running around. We gotta do something to help people. We're gonna close down businesses to keep people from getting sick, and then we're gonna send them money. And I'm like, no, that's not your role. Like, you can inform us if you'd like to, but it's not your role to close down businesses and then send people print money that the taxpayers just print money out of thin air and then send it to taxpayers to reimburse them for taking their private property from them, essentially closing their business so they can't operate. That's not your role. Your role is to secure their right to their private property to be able to operate their business during these kind of crises. I mean, that's what the Constitution was put in place for, so that during a crisis situation, government could not get out of control. And that's exactly what it did. Well, it's just for 2 weeks, you know, it's flatten the curve, and here we are. Not like that in Florida, but, you know, in other states across the nation, now you got to show your papers to go to a restaurant. I'm thinking the Founding Fathers are rolling over in their graves. Show papers to go to a restaurant. Show your papers to get on a train. Show your papers to get on a plane. It was like, no, that was never the idea. It was supposed to be free, uninhibited, you know, traveling and commerce between the states. It's just, yeah.
I think I heard on air earlier today that at the Super Bowl, I don't know if they have to show papers, but they're not supposed to get in, I believe, if they've not been given the COVID shot.
Yeah.
I do know that everybody there has to wear masks, and that they're actually passing out, I forget what grade, but some quality of mask. And this is the biggie. They're going to have people who are walking through the crowd telling people to pull their mask up during Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's just all nonsense. So. But yeah, that's, you know, from my book, that's what I just was like, now they'd be rolling over in their graves based on the intrusion that government has in our lives right now. So,
well, let me ask you this. When you look at what America has become.
Mm-hmm.
How do we fix it?
So a lot of people...
We used to say at the polls.
Yeah, that's still the way to fix it. I mean, that's the way the system's set up. I know there are, a lot of people are angry. A lot of people are mad. I'm not going to vote till the Dominion machines are gone. You know, I don't trust the system. Look, here's the way it works. We have elected officials, and they have power. They have political power. They have executive power, and they're the ones who make laws and then execute them and appoint judges. And so the way you fix it is you find people that are not necessarily conservatives or liberals. You find people that are constitutionalists. You know, what does the Constitution say? Somebody's watching on Facebook Live, and I agree, like, Generally, the people in the grand old party, the Republican Party, think more like that. But you have to, like, what does the Constitution say about this? So, for instance, here in Manatee County, they put a curfew in back early in the COVID thing. You know, well, you can't go out from 11 to 5 because, you know, we just don't want you out. Nothing good happens after midnight. And there are some other reasons behind that. I'm not going to go into it. I talked to some politicians locally about that. But the bottom line, so I asked this politician, I said, well, can you restrict my liberty to basically what? I have to stay in my house from 11 at night till 5 in the morning? What if it was from 7 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon? Can you restrict it then? Can you restrict my life, liberty, or property without due process of law? Do you just have the power as county commissioners to just take a vote and say everybody has to stay home in their homes between 11 to 5, you know, unless you're like a, you know, a police officer, you have an emergency and you have to run. Your wife's having a baby, you need to take her to the hospital. Well, but it seemed like a good idea because, you know, there was a lot of, you know, crime was on the increase and there were some issues with, you know, how many officers we had available and stuff. I'm like, yeah, there are lots of things that are a good idea. You could lower the speed limit to 15 miles an hour and cut down the number of traffic deaths probably by 90%. But, you know, is that a good idea? And we just don't, the politicians don't think like that anymore. They think, well, what sounds like a good thing to do? What's a good idea and how can I help people? No, your role as a politician is to secure people's rights. That's what it says in the Declaration of Independence. That's our social contract that we put together. And if the first thought in your mind is, how can I help people? What good things can I do for them? You're wrong. And you're very arrogant too, because the idea that you can come up with this great idea in your mind and fix big problems is dangerous. I mean, we like printing all this money. Well, it's a great idea. We'll just print all this money and give it. Why would you not want to give money to people that are poor? That's a great idea. We'll just print it, you know, and the smartest people economically in the country, you know, the people, Powell and Yeltsin, Janet Yeltsin. And, you know, and now we've got inflation completely out of control. I can't even fill up my, at some gas stations, I can't even fill up my car right now because when you stick your credit card in the machine, the limit that some machines have is $75.
Yeah.
So when the price went up to over about $3.20 a gallon, it just shuts it off at, like, you know, you can put 26 gallons in my truck. It shuts it off at 22 gallons. Like, that's it. That's all you get. Like,
wow.
No, I really want to fill up my car. Sorry, the price is up. And, you know, so some people, they spend $80, $100 more, you know, a month on gas. Doesn't matter. But to a single parent who's out there, $100 means a lot. It's how she pays for her kids' extracurricular activities. It's the cool thing. She gets to take her kids to, you know, movie night with them, and they go for pizza. And, you know, she has to buy a pizza and go, how much movies cost for four kids, 67, three kids. I don't know. You know, it wasn't a good idea. Yeah, but it sounded like a good idea. You know, we closed down everybody's businesses. They need money, so now we got to give them money. Why is that a bad idea? It's just because it's not constitutional. You just. Yeah.
Well, the thing about it is if you look at politicians and you look at how they go into office, coming from supposedly the founders set it up where you'd leave the family farm, you go to Washington, you do your 2 years, your 4 years, your 6 years, what have you, and you return back, you know, mm-hmm. to the general store or whatever you did. We've got guys that are in there for six terms,
right,
eight terms, and guys that are coming out worth millions upon millions of dollars.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, it's career politician.
It's hard. I contend that they are not necessarily concerned with fixing things, with following the Constitution, which the founders made explicitly clear. They wrote it down. Okay? Everything's there for you to see. And if it's in there, it applies. If it ain't in there, guess what? But for some reason, it has been totally, completely just ignored to the point where it seems as though they're taking these positions and they're doing what they can to create personal gain.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's what it was set up for back then versus what it's become now.
Yeah, but people being people, you know, yeah. We just have to vote them out. Again, it's back to us voters being educated voters. If you don't like people, then vote them out. If you think they've been there too long, vote them out. We have to get more. We can't just keep putting the responsibility on.
Yeah, but the opposite of vote them out is vote them in. And I think there were like 80 million people that tried to vote a guy back in.
You know, here's an interesting statistic. Interesting statistic I came upon during my research is, typically, if you take a survey, what's your approval of Congress, which is senators and House of Representative members, mm-hmm. it's like it varies between, I don't know, 18-22%, and yet 90% of those people get reelected.
There you go.
So you're like, well, okay, the approval rating for all these people is around 20%, and yet 90% of them get reelected. And that's because people just don't take their time to get educated before they vote a lot of people, and they just go, Bob Smith, I mean, I know Bob. I've seen him on TV, and he's not in jail. I haven't seen anything bad. Who's this other guy? Yeah, I'll know that other guy. I'll just vote for Bob again. You know, it's really sad, but anyway.
Well, Justin, right. Many of our listeners, they're going to want to purchase Interview with the Founders by Justin American. Where can they purchase a copy?
Sure. So if you go to Amazon and put it in parentheses, Justin. American, right, in parentheses, Justin, J-U-S-T-I-N, space, American. You could also put Interviews with the Founders. If you'll know you're at the right place, you'll get a book that comes up. It says Interviews with the Founders. It's got a picture of Washington, Jefferson, and Franklin on the front. You can also go to my website, Justin American, J-U-S-T-I-N-A-M-E-R-I-C-A-N, justinamerican.com, and right there on the main page it says get a copy of Justin's book. You can buy it on Amazon. I also have it on an Etsy website. And the good thing about getting it from Etsy is that I can give you a signed copy, whereas if you buy it from Amazon, they're just going to print it and send it to you. But if you buy it on Etsy, I think it's $2 more on Etsy because I have to ship it myself. But you can get a signed copy that way, and I'll put your name in it and give you a signed copy.
Don't you have it in a couple of local stores or outlets?
Yeah.
Give them a plug.
Sure. So if you're local here in the on the Sun Coast, you can go to Scavengers Market. There are three stores, one down in Sarasota, one in Holmes Beach, and one up in Palmetto. And they also have my T-shirt, I'm Just an American, with the ABCs of being Just an American on the back of the shirt. You can also go to Mixon's Fruit Farms. They sell my book there also. And Mixon's Fruit Farms is a great small business. They have some really good citrus fruit there right now that they've just picked recently. And, you can get it locally around here too, so in the Bradenton area. Scavengers Market and Mixon Fruit Farms.
So, Justin, let me ask you, in turning this thing around, I've always wanted to know, what are the Federalist Papers, and why are they so relevant today?
So the Federalist Papers are a series of essays that were written by three founding fathers, John Jay, Alexander Hamilton, and James Madison. James Madison being the...
Who's John Jay?
So I was going to go through that real quick. So James Madison, I'm looking through my presidents, fourth president of the United States, very close friend of Jefferson, even of Washington at certain points. Alexander Hamilton was the first secretary of the Treasury of the United States of America, and he was very close with Washington during the Revolutionary War. And then John Jay, if I remember correctly, he was the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. I have to go back. He was on the Supreme Court. I think he was the first Chief Justice appointed by Washington. Anyway, very well-educated founding fathers during the era of the Revolution. And so when the Constitution, the Constitutional Convention was put together by the states to revise the Articles of Confederation that were running the country after the Revolutionary War ended around 1783. And they were weak, and they didn't allow the country to kind of gel and work together very well. There wasn't the ability to raise enough revenue to support the country and the national defense. And so some states got together and said, hey, we should revise these things. And what happened was they got a whole new constitution out of it. And so the constitution comes together. The delegates at the constitution say, we, by a vote, approved this as a proposed constitution for the United States of America. And then 9 out of the 13 original colonies had to ratify it in state ratifying conventions for it to become the law of the land and to supersede the Articles of Confederation. And so Madison, James, and Jay started writing these articles. It's 82, 83 essays, I think it's 82, and publishing them in newspapers, especially in New York. That was one of the bigger states that they were, people who were for the Constitution were concerned that New York wouldn't ratify. And they just started publishing them on a regular basis in newspapers around the country. And they're very important because these very educated men who had gone back and knew their politics from Aristotle forward, had looked at different times, you know, knew the spirit of the laws by Montesquieu, and these, you know, had read John Locke, you know, his two treaties. And they understood, like, okay, this is the kind of government that works. This is why direct democracy failed in ancient Greece and Athens. There have been some republics based on constitutions, but there's some things that went wrong with them. They were generally done in smaller countries. How are we gonna combine all this together to figure out how to make it work for a big country like the United States of America? And so it is an apology. Right, and in this sense, the apology means in support of, an apology for the Constitution. Those essays were an apology in support of the Constitution, based on, and they were basically explaining, look, this is why we set up the Constitution that we did, not just because we have these great ideas in our brain, but we went back and looked at a couple thousand years of human history and political history, history of republics, histories of democracies, and then we said, okay, based on all that, we think this was what would work the best for the United States of America. So it was like, it was creativity based on previous. They were standing on the shoulders of other giants.
Well, were these three men working together, like, for lack of a better terminology, were they like in the same room? Were they, was this a group type thing, or was it a bunch of individuals that said, for example, I'm going to research this portion over here and bring it in. I'm going to do this portion here and then the third. And, how did they decide what's going to – how did they decide what's going to actually become
– Yeah, that's a long
– The Constitution.
That's a long – oh, how did they decide what's going to be – yeah, that's a long story that we probably don't have time to tell. But it was based on people at that convention like James Madison, who had read all that history and knew his politics and his philosophy and the history of republics and democracies, and all those people coming together – and then coming up with the Constitution, which supposedly, by the way, remember Benjamin Franklin said after the convention was over, and he walks out and somebody said, what kind of government do we have? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it, because he knew that it was going to be based on people being educated voters, people using their Judeo-Christian values to maintain their political, moral, economic systems. So, yeah. That's probably a good enough answer.
Well, I got to tell you, mm-hmm. when you selected to agree to let me do this interview, mm-hmm. okay, I have to tell you a couple of things.
Okay.
One, I'm a history guy.
Okay.
I love this stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I first noticed your book online when I lived in Virginia. Before I actually came to Florida.
Hmm, okay.
And I thought it was going to be one of those yawners, okay? But I always loved the cover of it, okay?
Yeah.
And I am so thankful for my personally signed copy because it has been an amazing read.
Well, thank you.
It's really, really, really a great book.
Thanks.
And so I selected a few plums out of it.
Okay.
Okay. And if you would go to page 13,
okay.
There's a question.
Yep.
And I'd like to have you read a little bit. The question is, Uncle Sam, how big should he be?
Right.
And if you could read the first paragraph, because I just found it to be spot on.
Right. So this is Madison writing. By the way, all three of those guys, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay, they wrote under a pen name called Publius, who is an ancient writer. And again, a long story for another time. But anyway, but this is actually Madison. We kind of can figure out who wrote which Federalist Papers, and Madison wrote this one. Anyway, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. In framing a government which is to be administered by men over men, the great difficulty lies in this. You must first enable the government to control the governed, and in the next place, oblige it to control itself. And that was from Federalist number 51. And this idea, see, this is the main difference between the French and the American Revolution. If men were angels, no government would be necessary. If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary. The French had this idea with the Enlightenment that we can do away with God, and that idea that, remember that I talked about at the beginning about Washington said the ability to maintain good morality in society absent religious values is a really bad idea. The French proved it because they said, no, we're rational thinkers over here in this French Enlightenment thing. We're going to get rid of the whole God thing, and we're going to run this revolution. We're going to get rid of our monarch too, just like the Americans did, but we don't need the God thing. You know, we got this figured out, and men are not angels, and they're not governed by angels. And unless you put controls on them with a separation of powers, which the French Revolutionary Government did not, the whole thing ended up being run by what was called a Committee of Public Safety, 12 dudes, one of the famous ones, a guy named Robespierre, and they ended up, you know, chopping off thousands of people's heads and going out in the countryside and rounding up men, women, children, priests, nuns that were supposedly anti-revolutionaries, tying them up in fields and then shooting them with cannonballs to try and kill them. And then the ones that didn't, that were just wounded and killed, they'd take a musket and stick it in the back of their head and shoot them and kill them that way.
Nice.
Like, that's what happens. Like, Washington was right. Like, that's what happens when thou shalt not kill. Remember that commandment? Yeah, but I'm a revolutionary, and I have a reason to kill women and children and nuns and priests because they're not for the revolution. Thou shalt not. Actually, the best translation of that, by the way, is thou shalt not murder. Because obviously war happens in the Bible. It would be odd to say, well, God doesn't want you to kill, but there were times when war happened and God authorized it. The better translation of that word from the Hebrew is thou shalt not murder.
David wanted to build the Lord's house, and the Lord said, you know, you got too much blood on your hands.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So, yep. So there you go. Yeah, that's that was the difference between. That's why you need God, because it reminds us that we're all sinners and we have to put limits on our power and our ability to control other people. Otherwise, it gets out of hand, and we just saw that during COVID. Can't go to a movie theater. You shut down your business. Stay in your house. Can't go to the beach. It's just like they were right. The founding fathers were right. So,
well, now this president was not one of the founders, mm-hmm. But actually is one of my favorites. Okay. And the second plum that I found is on page 54, if you'll turn there. Going to have you read for us what the 26th President Theodore Roosevelt stated, beginning with in the first place.
Sure. And just a little preview to this. This is where I came up with the idea for my pen name, Justin American, as well as my radio handle, because this is the idea that being an American has nothing to do with race and gender. It has to do with buying into the core values of being an American. So, yes, this is from Theodore Roosevelt. In the first place, we should insist that if the immigrant comes here in good faith, becomes an American, and assimilates himself to us, he shall be treated on an exact equality with everyone else. For it is an outrage to discriminate against any such man because of creed or birthplace or origin. But this is predicated upon the man's becoming, in very fact, an American, and nothing but an American. If he tries to keep segregated with men of his own origin and separated from the rest of America, then he isn't doing his part as an American. There can be no divided allegiance here. Any man who says he is an American, but something else, isn't an American at all. We have room for but one flag, the American flag, and this excludes the red flag, which symbolizes all wars against liberty and civilization. And I believe that's the communist red flag. I have to do a little more research on that. Just as much as it excludes any foreign flag of a nation to which we are hostile. We have room for but one language here, and that is the English language. for we intend to see that the crucible turns out people as Americans, of American nationality, not as dwellers in a polyglot boarding house, and we have room for but one sole loyalty, and that is loyalty to the American people. And I want to expound upon that just for a second, if I could.
Spend some time there.
Yeah, and that this does not mean, like, where he says, we have room for only one language, and we don't want a boarding house. This doesn't mean that we can't have, we are not a multicultural society. We are a one-culture society that has some core values that we all live by. However, within that multicultural society, we are a multiracial society. So, like, for instance, Jace, you have darker skin than I do. That doesn't matter in the United States of America. It shouldn't matter. It did at one time, but I truly believe that it really doesn't anymore. And those are the founding principles that have come forward to say, look, race and gender do not matter. We can be proud of whatever ethnic background we have. It literally adds spice to American life. Like, I love going to Indian restaurants. It literally adds spice to American life that we have Indian Americans here who are of, you know, Indian origin. When I say Indian, you know, Southeast Asia Indian, or that we have, people of Chinese origin or whatever origin that might be. But we all have to buy into these core values, what I call the ABCs of being just and American, which I'll go over real quick. A and B, America's beautiful. C, capitalist free market economy. D, democratic constitutional representative republic. E, English is the prior language, or as the primary language. F, the right to bear firearms. G, H, and I, Greco-Roman intellectual heritage. J, Judeo-Christian values. And one Judeo-Christian value that's very important is there is neither Greek nor Jew, male nor female, slave nor free, all are one in Christ. Right there is the Judeo-Christian God saying you are all equal before me, and none of you are better than another one based on your race or your gender. And Tocqueville actually repeated that line in Democracy in America, Alexis de Tocqueville, when he wrote Democracy in America after he'd spent some time in the United States, about 9 months in the 1830s. And he said it was necessary for Jesus Christ to come to the earth to remind us all, to show us all that we are all equal before God, no matter what our race and gender is. And that's where we get all men created equal, endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights.
Yeah, well, that's the American hope.
Right.
And that is that when people come to our shores, okay, and they seek to become an American, and they, you know, do it the legal way, okay, mm-hmm. and they take the oath, well, they're supposed to be embracing the language, you know,
yes.
and the freedoms
yes.
that are here, that
That's
exist.
Right. That's right.
You know what's interesting? Every time I traveled abroad,
mm-hmm.
and I don't care if it was Central America, I don't care if it was Europe, it didn't matter what country I went to, every single time I handed them my passport,
mm-hmm.
they opened it up, and you know what the very first thing they said was? Oh, you're an American.
There you go.
There's not one that ever said, oh, hey, you're black.
That's right.
Okay?
That's right.
But what's interesting is when you look at the politics that are played by both sides,
mm-hmm.
okay, it's so disheartening that race gets literally just shoved down yeah. everyone's throat. And when people ask me, or I do questionnaires, or
mm-hmm.
Occasionally speak somewhere or what have you, I tell them I was born an American.
That's right.
I just happen to be black.
There you go. You know, Morgan Freeman, we all know Morgan Freeman, older black actor. You can go out and find this on YouTube. You got to dig for it sometime. But Mike Wallace, Morgan Freeman, there's a minute clip there of a 60-minute interview that they did like 20 years ago. And in that clip, Mike Wallace looks at Morgan Freeman and says, what should we do about racism? This is like 20 years ago, right?
Right.
And Morgan Freeman looks at him and says, stop talking about it. And Mike Wallace is taken aback. Like, well, how are we going to fix it? And Morgan Freeman says, look, I'm going to stop looking at you as a white guy. I'm just going to call you Mike. How about you stop looking at me as a black guy and just call me Morgan?
Right.
We'll just move on from there. How about we just not talk about it anymore? I mean,
right.
I thought about this the other day. It would be like, you know, I was divorced back in 2001. And so that's, what, 20 years ago. And if I was still talking about it, like, you know, My wife, she did this and that, and people were like, dude, it's over. You have a great life now. Just don't talk about it. Yeah, but you need to understand how bad it was. Yeah, I'm sorry that happened to you, but don't talk about it anymore. Just move forward. Your life is good. And then Morgan Freeman was on with Don Lemon like 2013, maybe 10 years after that. And,
right.
And Don Lemon says, hey, you know, Morgan, is race a barrier to economic progression for Americans with black skin at this point in time? And Morgan's like, you mean like right now in this time? And Don Lemon's like, yeah, like right now. And he's like, ah, look at me, look at you. Like, you know, Don Lemon, a young gay black man, is a multimillionaire at the top of his profession as an anchor on CNN in prime time. And Morgan Freeman is a multimillionaire actor at the top of his game that we all, he's a household name. Like, it's like, no, no, stop talking about it. Just move on. Look, just go out and figure out what it is you want to do. That's a beautiful thing for America. And I could give you more and more quotes.
Well, let me throw you a curveball here then. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you take the immigrant that comes here,
mm-hmm.
Does everything that they're supposed to do,
yep.
to become legal,
yep.
okay, and to become an American and take the oath,
yep.
okay, versus somebody who crashes the border.
Right.
Okay, what's the difference in the two?
What's the difference in the two? Well,
what are they both seeking?
That's two different questions. So the difference is one respected the laws of our country and one didn't. They're both, some of them are seeking life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Others are coming here for nefarious reasons. Most of them are probably coming for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But a country without borders isn't a country. It's just a landmass where people transit and come and go as they please. It's just not, especially with the welfare state that we have. I think this was who said that? One of the great economists, short white guy, his name is escaping
Friedman.
Me. Friedman, yeah, Morgan.
Milton.
Milton Friedman said, "Look, you can't have open borders in a welfare state. You'll just suck your country dry." And that's unfortunately kind of what is happening today. Now, I do have compassion for people who are here, and if you read my book, I lay out a plan where we hold people accountable that have broken our laws and are here. But as long as they're not criminals, that there is a they have to admit to their crime. They have to pay a price for their crime. But there is a pathway for them to achieve life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in America without, having the harsh penalty of every one of you, no matter what your circumstances are going home, and you're going home now.
Well, I beg to differ with you here because I believe they came for life and liberty. Uh-huh. But if you look at since they started crashing the border,
right. Okay,
happiness is what's been under assault.
Happiness for the rest of America, you mean?
It's been completely under assault.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at when COVID hit, all mm-hmm. things fun were done.
That's interesting. I like
Think about that.
Yep.
All things were done
that
were fun.
Yeah.
And it's like I said earlier, can you imagine how they're going to police over 50,000 people at this upcoming Super Bowl? And tell them, hey, you got to pull up your face mask.
Yeah, it's just nonsense. Just
right. So what I'm saying is those who come in legally, which mm-hmm. is the point that I'm trying to make, okay,
yep.
and learn the language, okay, and have a job and do what they can to assimilate, that's the true aspect of seeking the American dream.
I hear you. You know, there's a great quote, I don't have time for it. I can see we're close to the top of the hour, but from Shakespeare in the Merchant of Venice, where he talks about seasoning justice with mercy. I think that's a good place to end. You know, there are laws and they need to be followed, but there is an aspect of justice and mercy, which is a very key aspect of the Judeo-Christian value system.
Thank you, Justin American.
Yep. Real quick, may the Lord bless and keep us all. May he make his face to shine upon us, and may he give us prosperity and peace. God bless us all here in on the sun coast of Florida, and God bless this greatest country on God's green earth, the United States of America. Thank you for tuning in, and pick up the book on Amazon or on Etsy, Justin American Interviews with the Founders.
You're listening to AM 1490 WWPR, Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.